Even if I did, though, it was forced and unnatural. I reflected within and found that I still had many shortcomings, such as seeing an opportunity to practice kindness and not being eager enough to do it, or having doubts when helping others in need. Sometimes I forced myself to act kindly, but my speech was still untamed and offensive. I found I could contain myself when sober, but after a few drinks, I would lose self-discipline and act without restraint. Although I often practiced kind deeds and accumulated merits, my faults and offenses were so numerous, they seemed to outnumber my good deeds. A lot of my time was spent vainly and without value. End quote. We would do well to pay attention to these several points. Mr. Liao Fan found that though he had corrected many faults, he was still unable to do things as enthusiastically as he ought to. As for us, we should not expect any reward when we help others, for it is our responsibility to do so. Confucius and others taught us the 5 human relationships and 10 moral responsibilities. The 5 human relationships are founded on traditional moral principles. They include those between husband and wife, parent and child, siblings, friends, political leaders, and the public. To practice what we ought to practice is a virtue of our nature. It is naturally within our responsibilities as parents to be protective, to care for, and guide our children. It is naturally within our responsibility as children to be filial, to honor, and to respect our parents. Whether as siblings or friends, we should be respectful towards each other. Friends should be trustworthy, honest, and reliable towards one another. All these are within our responsibility. We are naturally obligated to be such. All of us should be mutually caring, respectful towards one another, helpful towards one another. Mr. Liao Fan understood this, although he does not yet practice it perfectly and purely. For him and we, these are still intermingled with personal advantages and disadvantages. If I were to help this person, how would it benefit me? If we have these considerations, then our thoughts and actions are not pure, and we will be unable to wholeheartedly put our efforts into helping others. From this, we know that although we do kind deeds, we still have not yet done enough. Mr. Liao Fan carefully reflected and found that he still had many shortcomings, such as seeing an opportunity to practice kindness and not being eager enough to do it. Confucius taught of the virtue of assisting others in achieving kindness. He taught that beauty is a virtue. When we encounter others doing good deeds, we would do well to help them accomplish their goal. Why? A good deed can benefit the whole town, the whole society. For example, when a road needs to be fixed and a person volunteers to repair it, when we come upon an occurrence like this, we need to wholeheartedly put our efforts into assisting that person to accomplish this goal and to benefit the people. Any matter similar to this benefits people, benefits society, and deserves assistance from all of us. Another example is here in Singapore, where the Singapore Buddhist Lodge and the Amitabha Buddhist Society have visited the Muslims, Hindus, and Catholics. During these visits, we have had the good fortune to be able to assist them in their admirable work in such areas as caring for the aged, for the hearing impaired, and in providing free medical care. Some people have questioned why Buddhists are helping religious groups. We do so because it benefits people, benefits society, and needs assistance to be able to do so. This is what we learned from Liao Fan's four lessons. When we practice acts of kindness, we do not discriminate. We do not say, we will help these people, but we will not help those people. We need to practice the heart of helping, and to do so without expectation of reward. It is to wholeheartedly use our compassion, our wisdom. Mr. Liao Fan was able to go along in helping others, but could not do so wholeheartedly. He was only a little bit willing. He still had doubts when helping others in need. If others are in trouble, we need to help. But many of us first question whether we should or should not. In today's society, we frequently encounter people asking for help. Some of these people are frauds asking for money. After receiving it, they go out and spend it on overindulging themselves in food, drinks, and gambling. If so, then our kind deeds become transgressions. Thus, it is difficult indeed to do kind deeds, for it requires both compassion and wisdom. Compassion is the authentic driving force behind our helping others. Wisdom will help us to examine and judge whether we should or should not help. If the person does indeed need our help, then we do everything we can to assist them. On the other hand, if they try to cheat and swindle us, and we know what they are doing, we need to guide them. If they are not really old or ill, but are healthy and strong, then we can encourage and guide them, to encourage them to engage in a decent and proper job, not to be making a living using devious means. Sometimes, Mr. Liao Fan forced himself to act kindly. but his speech was still uncivilized and offensive. Therefore, correcting errors is to make a fresh start. It is not readily accomplished. It requires time and continuous reformation. In the beginning stages, difficulties are unavoidable. To behave kindly and courteously in manner while being careful, while being careless and thoughtless in speech, is a bad habit. Since ancient times, speech has been considered the source of both fortune and misfortune. So we need to be constantly aware in our speech. Of Confucius' four studies, the first one is that of virtuous conduct, which is basic to being an honest person. Today, we would call this moral education. However, this kind of education no longer exists today, as people today are less concerned about it. The second academic discipline is speech. Confucius was emphatic on the training of speech, that we should speak properly with respect and not harm others with our inconsiderate words. We often carelessly harm others with our speech. When this happens, they take offense and bear grudges. In the future, they will seek revenge. Thus, resentment and misunderstandings arises from this, creating many problems for us. The speaker had no such intention. The listener interpreted it to be so. We need to be discreet, reserved, and reticent in our speech. There really is no need to talk a lot. In talking less, we will commit fewer mistakes. For our achievement, while helping others to achieve as well, especially for practitioners cultivating purity of mind, one phrase of Amitabha will suffice. In this way, when we are subjected to listening to gossip, we do not respond with anything other than Amitabha. When they continue to gossip, we repeat Amitabha. We continue to repeat Amitabha several times. When they are finished, we will not have paid any attention to what they said. We will only have chanted and have forgotten whatever they were talking about. This will be good, for it is best not to say much. Mr. Liaofan had this bad habit of talking too much. He also found that he would be on his best behavior when sober, but after a few drinks, he would lose self-discipline and act without restraint. This restriction on intoxicants is one of the five major precepts in Buddhism. We need to understand exactly why the Buddha prohibited alcohol. When intoxicated, we can act foolishly and thus recklessly. If we can drink a moderate amount of alcohol and not become intoxicated, then there is an exception to this precept. The precept is very clear on this. We are not even supposed to take one drop of alcohol. There was the fear that we would be unable to control ourselves, which would lead to creating other problems, breaking other fundamental precepts. In the past, when Venerable Master Jing Kong was studying in Taichung. His late teacher, Mr. Bingnan Li, lectured on the Book of Rites. There was a commentary on the Book of Rites written by Mr. Kong Chung Jung, a learned scholar who combined profundity with virtue during the East Han Dynasty, almost 2,000 years ago. He was a student of Rong Ma, who in his own time was also an exceptional scholar. However, being narrow-minded, he was extremely displeased if any of his students' achievements surpassed his. Mr. Chung's achievement did precisely this. Rong Ma could not only not resign himself to this, but he hired someone to kill Mr. Chung. When Mr. Chung was taking leave from his teacher, the latter took his students to a pavilion 10 kilometers out of town to see Mr. Chung off. He implemented his ill-intentioned plan and began encouraging everyone to start drinking toasts to the departing student. Eventually, Mr. Chung drank 300 toasts. Rong Ma had hoped to get Mr. Chung drunk, which would have made it much easier for the killer to succeed with his plan. He had no idea that alcohol had no effect on his student. Mr. Chung maintained his demeanor of courtesy and propriety throughout the evening. Mr. Li said that if everyone were able to drink this much without being affected, then Buddha Shakyamuni would never have needed to establish this precept. We need to understand why Buddha Shakyamuni set up this as well as other precepts. When Buddhists are cooking, it is okay to use cooking wine because we will not become intoxicated. It is therefore permissible to use it for flavoring. As for the elderly, alcohol can improve circulation. So it is permissible for them to drink a glass at mealtime. These are exceptions to the rule. They are not breaking the precepts. We have learned of Mr. Liaofan's sincerity in honoring his teacher and revering his teachings. He did not casually say that he would do something and then gradually forget all about it. Instead, he had the rare ability to immediately understand and believe everything that Master Yuan Gu taught him. We see the depth of this understanding and belief as Mr. Liaofan began to regret each and every one of his faults in front of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. In essence, he asked them to be his witness. When we are truly intelligent and wise, we will let others know of our faults. Then when we are corrected, our karmic obstacles will be reduced. The master taught him to chant a mantra to help him concentrate his mind, eradicate his wandering thoughts, and thus attain purity of mind. To attain this goal of purity of mind remains the same whether we are chanting mantras, a Buddha's name, or reciting sutras. All emphasize cultivation. What is important is that we choose the method that is most appropriate for us if we cultivate sincerely and diligently. Then we will be able to end our erroneous ways, practice kind deeds, and cultivate purity of mind. In due time, whatever we seek will be attained. In seeking something from the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, or the beings of heaven and earth, we need to do so without having any thoughts or considerations for our seeking to be effective. To achieve this, our mind needs to be truly pure, without any wandering thoughts. This is the mind of sincerity, purity, and respect. Only when we appeal to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas using this mind will we attain what we seek. Unfortunately, most people wish for a happy and fulfilling life, not realizing that this is not necessarily synonymous with wealth, fame, and prestige. Therefore, we need to understand that if we wish to create our destiny, we need to be able to accord with sentient beings and to be joyful over the good deeds of others. Only in this way will our lives be happy and fulfilling, and then we can help others to attain these as well. Regardless of favorable or unfavorable conditions, we will be completely at ease. We will have good fortune and attain the great liberation. True happiness is not achievable without great knowledge and our efforts and our practice. Actual learning and true practice is true knowledge. Reaching achievement is returning to our original state. It is revealing our self nature, which is not the state of an ordinary being. This is true happiness. It is to be filled with the Dharma joy, to truly abandon suffering for happiness. It is what awakened people seek. Only when we become awakened will we be able to settle our mind, and only then will we be able to create our destiny. Amitabha. Respected Dharma masters, respected practitioners, and guests, in the last talk on Liao Fan's Four Lessons, we learned of Mr. Liao Fan's sincerity in honoring his teacher and revering his teachings. He did not casually say that he would do something and then forget all about it in a short time. Instead, he had the rare ability to immediately understand and believe everything the Master told him. We see the depth of this understanding and belief as Mr. Liao Fan began to regret each and every one of his faults in front of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. In essence, he asked them to be his witness. When we are truly intelligent and wise, we will let others know of our faults. Then, when we are corrected, our karmic obstacles will be reduced. The Master taught him to chant a mantra to help him to concentrate his mind, to eradicate his wandering thoughts, and to uncover his true mind. The goal to attain purity of mind remains the same whether we are reciting sutras, chanting mantras,
or chanting a Buddha's name. What is important is that we choose the method that is right for us. If we cultivate sincerely and diligently, then we will be able to end our erroneous ways, practice kind deeds, and cultivate purity of mind. In due time, whatever we seek will be attained. In our seeking something from the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, or beings of heaven or earth, we need to do so without having any thoughts or considerations for our seeking to be truly effective. To achieve this, our mind needs to be truly pure, without any wandering thoughts. This is the mind of sincerity, purity, and respect. Only when we appeal to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas using our mind of utmost sincerity will we attain what we wish for. Unfortunately, most people wish for a happy and fulfilling life, not realizing that happiness and fulfilling life are not necessarily synonymous with fame, wealth, and prestige. Therefore, we need to understand that when we wish to create our destiny, we need to be able to accord with sentient beings and to be joyful over the meritorious deeds of others. Only in this way will our lives truly be happy and fulfilling. Regardless of favorable or unfavorable circumstances, we will be completely at ease. Everything will become clear and logical. We will have good fortune and attain ultimate liberation. This is true living. True happiness is not achievable without great knowledge and our actual efforts in our practice. Actual learning and practice are true knowledge. Reaching achievement is returning to our original state. It is to reveal our original self-nature, which is not the state of an ordinary being. This is true happiness. It is to be filled with the Dharma joy, to truly abandon suffering for happiness. It is what awakened people seek. Only when we become awakened will we be able to settle our minds. And only then will we be able to create our destiny. In the last talk on creating and changing destiny, I spoke of the precept against the consumption of intoxicants. There is also another precept against the consumption of the five pungent vegetables of onions, green onions, chives, garlic, and leeks. The Buddha prohibited the consumption of these five vegetables to discourage people from consuming them, and he especially prohibited the use of garlic. Why? The Suringama Sutra explains that purity of mind is of utmost importance in our cultivation. However, if we have not yet reached a certain level of achievement, our intake of both food and drink can adversely affect our purity of mind. Once we have achieved a certain level, we will be in control of our minds, able to control our environment. Then there will be no hindrances. But until then, our minds are still influenced by the environment. So if we can have these five pungent vegetables, we will no longer be in control of that environment. The Buddha told us that when we eat these five vegetables, it can increase our irritability when we consume them raw. To eat them cooked can increase our hormone production. So there are many reasons why the Buddha set up these precepts. In other words, whether we eat these raw or cooked, they are forbidden because they can adversely affect us, increasing our afflictions. Some lay people have said, if we cannot eat these vegetables, then we do not wish to become vegetarian. We need to understand the reasons behind this and all precepts. If these vegetables are used as seasonings, they will have no adverse effects. For example, if we stir fry one or two cloves of garlic into a dish, it will not cause any harm. Thus, when we understand the reasoning, we will see that Buddhism is very logical and very flexible. There are exceptions to strictly observing the precepts, even after receiving them, that enable us to introduce Buddhism to others. Therefore, at certain functions, we need to behave wisely, to adapt ourselves to the current circumstances, and to make use of the opportunity to introduce Buddhism to others. It is an unimaginably rare opportunity for them to hear of these teachings. During drinks and at mealtime, we can explain to them the great truths of Buddhism to plant the good root. This is a rare educational opportunity not to be wasted. From the text, it took me more than 10 years to complete the 10,000 meritorious deeds I had vowed to do. I was unable to dedicate the merits from these good deeds at a temple until I returned to my hometown in the South a few years later. At that time, I had the opportunity to ask two monks to dedicate them for me. End quote. It took Mr. Liao Fan more than 10 years to fulfill his vow. Because he had a post with the army that required traveling, he did not have a chance to dedicate the merits. It was not until the year after he had fulfilled his vow to accomplish the good deeds that he had the opportunity, the chance to do so. He engaged the services of several monks at a temple to dedicate the merits on his behalf after having completely fulfilled his vow to accomplish the good deeds. Upon making his pledge, he had written to gods or to spirits to express his sincerity and earnestness in turning over a new leaf and in accumulating merits and virtues. Upon completion of his 3,000 meritorious deeds, he dedicated them to repay an obligation and for the fulfillment of his wish. From the text. Then I made my second wish, and that was for a son. I vowed to complete another 3,000 meritorious good deeds. A few years later, your mother gave birth to you and named you Tianqi. End quote. Mr. Liao Fan had not been destined to have a son, but having wished for one, found his wish was fulfilled. Proper seeking will enhance the gain. He attained his wish due to correct seeking and cultivation. Mr. Liao Fan had pledged to complete 3,000 more good deeds, but before he had completed them, his wife had given birth to their first son, Tianqi. From this, we can see that if we truly and sincerely wish for something, it will come true. Of course, although he had gained a son before completing his pledge of the 3,000 good deeds, he would honor it. It was the same as what had happened previously. He took the imperial examination, but before he could fulfill his pledge, he came in first when he had been destined to come in third. This is to be in correspondence, and this is truly inconceivable. From the text. Every time I performed a good deed, I would record it in a book. Your mother, who could not read or write, would use a goose feather dipped in ink and make a red circle on the calendar for every good deed that she did. Sometimes she gave food to the poor, or bought living creatures from the marketplace and freed them in the wild. She recorded all of these with her red circles on the calendar. At times, she could accumulate more than 10 red circles in one day. End quote. Mr. Liao Fan's wife would buy animals in the marketplace and then set them free. When we have the heart to free captured creatures, we need to be careful not to be deceived. Many people who wanted to free animals would go to the market and buy them there. But they often captured the animals or the birds for us to buy to set free. If we did not buy the animals, they would not capture them. The more we try to free, the more they will try to capture. This will not help them, but will in fact put more of them at risk, causing more harm than good. In so doing, we do not only accumulate merits, but we accumulate offenses instead. Therefore, when we want to free living creatures, we need to do so only with those we inadvertently come upon in the marketplace when we do our grocery shopping. Do not by them or seek them purposely, for to do so is to seek an affinity. By happening to come upon them, we can determine if they are able to survive in the wild. If they are, then we can buy them and set them free. If we do not think they are able to survive, then it would be better to use our money for some other purpose to cultivate and accumulate merits. Therefore, we need to be wise in our actions and not act impulsively. The meaning of freeing animals does not mean simply freeing them in the wild. It also includes becoming a vegetarian and encouraging others not to kill living beings, but to care for them. For example, we can print and freely distribute copies of the book, The Love of Life, with its beautiful illustrations by Mr. Z. Kai Fung, a famous Chinese illustrator. However, parts of this book are in classical Chinese. So perhaps someone could update the classical Chinese with phonetic pronunciations to update the book, as well as putting the illustrations into color. To do so would help today's children nurture the desire to help and care for all living beings. By doing so, we will truly achieve the essence of freeing living creatures. We need to understand the spirit, the profound meaning behind what we are taught, and not just follow something to the letter of what is said. As for the practice of giving, there are many kinds, including that of wealth, teaching, and fearlessness, each with their own inconceivably vast and profound meanings. Both Mr. Liao Fan and his wife had refrained from wrongdoing and practiced good deeds. They were accomplishing their goal much faster than they had accomplished previously. In the past, they were sometimes unable to accomplish one good deed in one day, but took several days to do so. Thus, it took 10 years to complete 10,000 meritorious deeds. With 3,650 days in 10 years, accomplishing one good deed a day means there are over 600 days when they were unable to accomplish one single good deed. But now, they were able to accomplish 10 good deeds in one day. A vast improvement over before. It is very difficult to turn over a new leaf, but they had the perseverance and the patience to do so. Without the willpower, the determination, it is not easy to eradicate our bad habits and faults. And this is the reason why many of us regress more than we progress on the path to enlightenment. From the book, every day we practiced like this, and in 4 years, the 3,000 meritorious deeds were completed. Again, I made the dedications, this time in our home. on September 13th of that same year, I made my third wish. And that was to pass the highest level of the imperial examination. I also vowed to complete 10,000 meritorious deeds. After 3 years, I attained my wish and passed the examination. I was also made mayor of Baudi County. End quote. From 1580 to 1583, it only took Mr. Liao Fan 4 years to complete the second pledge of 3,000 good deeds, whereas it had taken 10 years to complete the previous good deeds. This time, he again engaged the services of a monk to make the dedication at his home. On September 13th, he made the wish to pass the highest level of the imperial examination. He had not been destined to pass this particular examination at all. However, his destiny had also not included having a son, but he had attained one through his seeking and practice.